The illegal wildlife trade in Southeast Asia is worth an estimated $10 billion a year, maybe more. Many who study the trade say it's third only to gun and drug running in the amount of money it generates. Many who profit are the same people involved in the gun and drug trades. Despite international and local laws aimed at stopping the trade, it continues to flourish, threatening the region's wildlife and forests. NPR's Michael Sullivan reports in this National Geographic radio expedition.
Chris Shepherd is Canadian by birth, a conservationist by choice, and a man deeply committed to fighting the illegal wildlife trade. Shepherd covers Southeast Asia for the group Traffic International. In that capacity, he's visited thousands of wildlife dealers, legal and illegal, in Indonesia, in Thailand, in Malaysia, to gauge the extent of the problem. He says the volume of illegal trade in the region each year is staggering.
Sometimes hundreds of thousands of specimens in trade annually of different species, especially freshwater turtles and tortoises, pythons, cobras, rat snakes, monitor lizards. Mammals are traded by the thousands and by the tons. And when we're dealing with the meat trade, we're looking at thousands of kilograms being traded for domestic consumption. They're wiping out the wildlife.
That wildlife is bought and sold in markets in every country in the region. Some specialize in live animals, others in trophies or animal parts used in traditional Eastern medicines. International borders mean little to wildlife traffickers. They are little more than speed bumps to those in the trade. Shepherd says the Tachilik market just across the border from the northern Thai town of Mae Sai is one of the most notorious wildlife markets. Despite occasional crackdowns by the authorities, illegal wildlife is still widely available. Shepherd says Myanmar is a major source country for species going both to Thailand to the south and China to the east, and Tachilik a major stop along that route.
This is one of the larger ones for catskins. It's not the only one, but it is one of the larger ones when you're looking at protected species like the tiger, clouded leopard. Sometimes you'll be able to count more than 60 or 70 clouded leopard skins on a visit. There's always protected species for sale.
It's a trip that Chris can't make with us. The traders know his face, but tourists can arrange day-long visas to Tachilik from the Thai side for a $5 fee. Journalists are discouraged. The authorities on both sides aren't happy to see their lack of vigilance exposed. So we go across as tourists, with our recording equipment hidden in a backpack. Walk across the bridge spanning the fast-moving, monsoon-swollen river that serves as the border. Take your first ride into the crowded market, and you'll find everything from pirated DVDs to BVDs. A sign in the city square welcomes you to the heart of Myanmar's Golden Triangle. Not even 100 yards from the border, vendors openly display illegal animal parts, spread out on tables along the roadside for buyers to inspect. Leopard skins and deer antlers for trophies, dried tiger penises for traditional medicines. It's all here for a price. One Burmese woman eagerly displays a beautiful golden brown clouded leopard skin, about 3 feet long, pulled from an iron trunk in the back of her store.
She said it's crowded left part and usually 2,000, but she give you discount, 200 discount, so it's 1,800.
Would I have a problem if I tried to bring this back to Bangkok?
She said for the skin, if only one, no problem.
Well, but what if I bought two?
She said one person, one skin, it's fine. But two, you might get problem.
Okay. If I wanted to buy more than one, if I wanted to buy two or three, how would I get them across?
If only one, you take it with you. But if you want to buy two or three, she will find somebody to take it across the border for you.
Across the street, another vendor from South India beckons me over. His selection, he says, is far greater and of better quality than his neighbor's. He, too, has clouded leopard skins and spotted leopards, too. Bear skins, even tiger skins, are available as well.
I have many have your choice. Your discount, no problem. Your another shop smaller.
You've seen me over there. You think her shop is smaller?
Yes.
You say you have a better choice?
How many have your choice? How many pieces? You 40 pieces, 50 pieces, many have.
40 pieces or 50 pieces?
Yes.
You could provide, no problem.
No problem.
But there is a problem, me getting it across the border, yes?
No problem.
If I get caught, how much fine? Police, problem, how much fine?
No problem.
Is you are okay. Jail, prison, or just money?
Just money, you pay, no problem.
Okay, let me think about this some more, G. Thank you.
On the way back across the bridge into Thailand, nobody inspects the bag I'm carrying, which could easily hold half a dozen tiger or leopard skins. And if the vendor is right, a little money in the right hands would make everything okay. Even if enforcement here were more vigilant, the borders between Southeast Asian countries are long and extremely porous. The region's working rivers, like this one in Bangkok, are as busy as highways in more developed countries, carrying many goods, legal and illegal, from one end of the region to the other. And the rivers are just one way to move the product. Again, Chris Shepherd of Traffic International.
When you're looking at countries like the Philippines or Indonesia that have thousands of islands, therefore thousands of potential ports. On mainland Southeast Asia, you have everything from major highways crossing borders all the way down to trails through the forest or through the mountains. That's virtually impossible to monitor all these.
The more perishable wildlife is often transported by air using false waybills or buried in the middle of legitimate shipments. Some is even transported as carry-on luggage. But as with drugs, as long as there's a demand, the trade will remain. And with rising living standards throughout the region, especially in China, that demand may even grow. Liz Bennett runs the Hunting and Wildlife Trade Program at the Wildlife Conservation Society.
Most of the world's largest and fastest growing economies are in this part of the world, and so people are now having the money to buy the wildlife. There's now access routes into pretty much all forests throughout the region, so there is nowhere where wildlife is safe.
So consumerism is definitely fueling the
demand. Yes, it is. It's fueling the demand in a huge way, so that if you have your skillful subsistence hunter, he knows if he traps or shoots an animal that he himself and his family aren't going to immediately use, he knows he can find a market for it.
Tomorrow we'll go to the largest national park in Thailand, one of several protected areas created by the Thai government to preserve some of the wildlife that remains. For Radio Expeditions, this is Michael Sullivan, NPR News.
Radio Expeditions is a co-production of NPR and the National Geographic Society. There are photographs and more on wildlife trade at npr.org.